This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, December 5th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. Support for KUAF also comes from Walton Art Center, presenting Mannheim Steamroller Christmas at 4 and 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, December 11th. Both performances feature the holiday music of Mannheim Steamroller along with multimedia effects. Tickets and more information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we learn about the Eureka Springs Palace Hotel, which once upon a time served as a bordello. Plus, Still on the Hill visits the Firm and Garner Performance Studio in the form of a quartet. All four original members of the band reunite for the first time in years for a conversation and live performance.
All of that and more, but first, revenue data released Tuesday for the month of November shows a slightly improving economy in Arkansas. Last month's report indicates tax collections are slightly ahead of November of last year. John Shelnut is an economist with the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration.
November revenue collections came in above forecast by $4.6 million, or 1.3%, for net available funds, and also above forecast for gross general revenue, which is collections, by $4 million, or 0.9%.
Shelnut says the slight uptick is consistent with DF&A projections. Income tax collections were up, contributing to the increase, but the bulk of revenue came from sales tax collections, which were also up. Overall, the net available revenues last month totaled just over $350 million.
Students at Bentonville's elementary and junior high schools may find themselves attending different schools next year. The school board at its meeting December 17th will vote on whether to adopt a proposed school rezoning plan to accommodate expansions at four district elementary schools and a new junior high school set to open next year. Michael Poor is the superintendent of Bentonville Public Schools.
It really affects, in some ways, you could say all of our K-8 students in one regard or another, because even if you're staying at a school that you're currently at, you may be having some other students that are in your school this year that won't be back. So there is transition for our students, and this is all built around things that we're having to respond to as we grow as a district.
This is the second rezoning in as many years for elementary schools in the district, made necessary, Poor says, by the construction of additional classrooms at the elementary schools. In fact, he says so many classrooms are being added that nearly the equivalent of an additional small elementary school will be built by the time classes start in the fall.
We do know that those kind of transitions are hard on kids, and yet it's also hard on kids when they're not able to go close to their neighborhood school. Right now, we are busing kids across several attendance lines to get them into schools where there is space, and with this particular boundary adjustment that we're proposing, you'll have kids closer to their neighborhood school, which cuts down on the traffic time for them to be on buses or for parents to have to go pick them up. We're also reducing some traffic on the north end of our district where Bella Vista is, and making it far easier for students and parents to get to their schools, a little less time on the bus.
Poor says growth in the school district is outpacing what officials estimated. While district officials plan for 500 new students this school year, more than 850 new students entered the school district.
The Fayetteville City Council last night unanimously selected a site for a planned downtown parking deck. The council elected to build a deck on the theater lot located at the southeast corner of the Walton Art Center campus, the current location of the Walton Art Center administration offices. But buildings along the southwest corner of the campus, including Grubbs Bar and Grill, would not be removed for construction of the deck. According to city documents, the deck would include 246 parking spaces and cost about $6.37 million.
An organization developing science-based sustainability measuring and reporting tools has been ranked as an innovative idea. Scientific American magazine has ranked the Sustainability Consortium among its top 10 world-changing ideas for 2012. The consortium is jointly administered by the University of Arkansas and the University of Arizona and has more than 80 member companies, including Walmart, Coca-Cola, and Disney. In its top 10 list, the Scientific American outlines 10 innovations that are, as it puts it, radical enough to change our lives. For its spot on the list, the Sustainability Consortium is noted for creating a superior sustainability measurement and reporting system because of its comprehensive nature and cross-sector approach. The consortium has compiled information for more than 100 different product categories, including food, beverage and agriculture, electronics, toys, home and personal care, paper, pulp and forestry, and packaging.
The flu has come early to Arkansas this year. Health professionals are reporting an increase in flu cases this month, urging all Arkansans to get their vaccinations now. Ed Barham with the State Health Department says there are many places to get the flu vaccine, including pharmacies and most doctors' offices.
Well, in general, the advice is the same, to wash your hands and to stay away from people that are sick. The most important advice that we can give is get your flu shot now. If you haven't already had a flu shot, it's the best protection you can get against the flu, and this may be a particularly bad season.
The health department says it is surprising to see the flu this early in the winter season, but is well prepared to accommodate anyone who wants the vaccination.
This Saturday, the Fayetteville Animal Shelter will hold its holiday open house. City Animal Services Supervisor Justine Lentz says this will be the second year for the event.
It kind of started as just a time to encourage people to come down and see, you know, whatever improvements we've made over the year, to get new people that maybe haven't been in a while to come in and see everything that we've been doing. This year, we're also tying it in with an adoption promotion because we have lots and lots of cats and still quite a few dogs that really need homes for the holidays. And now's a really good time, we think, for people who are thinking about adopting.
Lent says now is a good time to adopt pets for the holidays, as there is still plenty of time before Christmas for potential adopters to get acquainted and bonded with their pets. She says during the open house, cats will be free to adopt, and adoption of dogs will cost only $10, and all pets are spayed or neutered and caught up on their vaccinations. Usually, the shelter sees an uptick in strays coming to the shelter between Thanksgiving and Christmas, but Lent says things usually slow down in January or February.
Unfortunately, this year we have seen kind of a later influx of kittens. Normally at Christmas, I could probably charge like $200 for a kitten if I wanted to, because there just aren't any and people want them. But this year we still have, you know, I would say at least half a dozen available for people that are looking.
Lent says in addition to the adoption specials, the open house will feature pictures with Santa, and for the cost of a small donation to the shelter, pet owners will have the opportunity to paint with their pets.
Clear tonight, then partly cloudy. Lows will be in the upper 30s in northwest Arkansas. Lows in the upper 40s for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, highs in the mid-60s with clear skies and southeasterly winds at about 20 miles per hour in northwest Arkansas. For the River Valley tomorrow, partly cloudy. Southeasterly winds at about 15 miles per hour. And for tomorrow night, partly cloudy. Lows from the upper 40s to lower 50s. This is Ozarks at Large. The Great Passion Play in Eureka Springs, a once popular tourist attraction, is shuttered for good. It was announced this week due to a lack of ticket sales. More on that in just a few minutes. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, Eureka Springs is embracing its Victorian past.
Eureka Springs was, in the late 1890s, the fourth largest city in Arkansas. Passenger trains steamed into town daily, packed with city dwellers seeking rest and rejuvenation among Eureka's popular cold water springs. And Eureka, like today, had cottages and hotels to suit all kinds of tastes. One popular place, however, was the Palace Hotel and Bathhouse on Spring Street. The cut limestone European castle-like facility featured a spa where patrons would be met by bath attendants, and for 50 cents you could enjoy a steam massage and Turkish bath. And you still can. The hotel was renovated in the early 1980s into luxury suites. Farrar Rose, Palace Hotel manager and concierge, takes us downstairs into the historic spa.
This would be our lower level bathhouse facility. We've kept it as original and authentic as possible. It's all original tile, partitions, clawfoot tubs from the early 19th century, wooden barrel style steam cabinets for our eucalyptus steam treatments, and they offer a variety of services, everything from mineral baths, eucalyptus steam treatments in the aforementioned barrel style steam cabinets, full body massage, body scrub, clay mask facials, etc., etc.
Farrar Rose runs a tub for us, originally spring fed. Now, of course, it's city water.
Now we filter all this water. So it is groundwater, but we filter it and then add minerals and salts to the bath as we prepare it, sort of simulating the healing waters that once existed here.
hundreds of thousands of Victorian tourists took the waters here, but during the Roaring Twenties, when interest in water therapies had declined, the palace offered something else.
Opened as a bordello, originally under the name the Palace Hotel, and sort of discreetly known as being a bordello at that time, and through the Prohibition period was run as such. And then later converted into a hotel. At that time it had as many as 16 rooms, twice as many as we have today. The rooms were more like stalls than the large jacuzzi suites that we have today. And the building was last fully renovated in 1983 to make the 8 king-size jacuzzi suites that we feature today.
And the original sign advertising the bordello still hangs out front.
It is believed to have been manufactured in France, with neon, shipped here to the East Coast and brought on rail to Eureka Springs, brought from the local railroad department up on a truck to this building and installed here. It is known to be the first neon sign to ever be installed on this side of the Mississippi River.
And describe the sign.
The sign is of infamous and phallic shape. It is, well, to put it quite simply, a large neon penis.
And at night, when it's fully lit?
I'd estimate the sign is probably 4 or 5 feet in width at the lower end and reaches approximately 15 to 20 feet in height. There are a lot of locals here who obviously have recognized the infamous shape of our sign, and it is commonly referred to as the Phallus Hotel because of it.
The historic record is really scant on this subject, but drinking saloons and houses of ill fame also operated in Eureka Springs, selling locally distilled whiskey. And some of them were likely clustered around the historic New Orleans Hotel, just down the hill from here. A year ago, two women renovated the hotel's lower level into the Voulez-Vous Lounge, offering French cuisine and exclusive entertainment. Proprietor Leslie Meeker.
Well, I'm intrigued by burlesque. I find Eureka Springs to be a very romantic space and village. So there's a revival of burlesque in metropolitan areas and not here.
Voulez-Vous Lounge is staging burlesque shows over the New Year's holiday and for Valentine's Day, and they always sell out, Meeker says. But when they first opened...
Actually, we had people ask initially, is it a strip club or what are you doing exactly? But then they come down here and they see that it's very plush and very inviting and very elegant. And we have wonderful jazz music and we have Prohibition era cocktails. So they love it. We've had a wonderful reception.
Both urban tourists and gay clientele frequent Voulez-Vous, where they feel free to express themselves, Leslie Meeker says.
My other business is I'm a psychotherapist, and I specialize in relationship and sex therapy. And one of the most important components that I teach to couples in relationships is play. Teach them how to play. And I feel like now what I've done here in this space, it's just an extension of my practice as a therapist, as well as the boutique, because now I'm providing a space for people to play, to feel playful.
Leslie Meeker and her partner Kelly Breslow's other business is across the street.
So now we're entering the fine art of romance, just across the street from the Voulez-Vous Lounge. Very convenient. And in this store, we offer nude fine art and men's and women's intimate apparel and romantic gifts.
And tourists often hesitate walking in front of the shop, she said.
And you see couples walk in and they're sort of shy at first. And by mid-store, they're each picking an item to try on, both men and women. As you get further back in the store, we have more risque lingerie and then romantic gifts. And by then, they're laughing and playing and... It's a whole experience.
The boutique is one of two lingerie shops in Eureka, along with specialty bars that cater to an insurgence of leathered-up bikers and a flourishing gay tourist industry. But Mary Pat Boyan, editor of the Eureka Springs Independent Weekly newspaper, said Eureka Springs became a tawdry destination after the state of Kansas in 1881 banned the sale of intoxicating beverages.
When Kansas outlawed liquor, a lot of people came down over the state line to Eureka Springs because it was fun.
But Prohibition and the Great Depression eventually undid Eureka's Victorian laces. But by the 1940s, artists and writers rediscovered it, promoting and celebrating Ozark's folk culture. The hippies and gays followed, restoring and colorizing the faded town, building lots of bed and breakfasts and a wedding industry.
There are more than 4,000 weddings a year here. It costs, I don't know, $55 or so, and you have to have cash, but there's no blood test. So a lot of people, you have to be of age, and you just come and sign up and somebody can marry you.
Eureka has lots of licensed freelance ministers to accommodate any type of ceremony a couple might wish for. And 4,000 weddings also means 4,000 honeymoons.
A lot of honeymoons. And you just need a nice room and a parking place, and you're good to go. You're good to stay here.
Half of the Palace Hotel's guests are honeymooners. The rest are couples looking to get away or to celebrate their anniversaries. Bo Satori has operated a gallery in downtown Eureka Springs for the past 36 years, currently called Satori Arts Temple. He started when real estate was dirt cheap and the downtown business district was partially vacant. From his perch, Satori has watched Eureka's tourism shift from busloads of great Passion Play patrons dining uptown at the local chicken fried steak buffet to couples strolling the downtown historic and cultural arts district after dark.
And so it is actually an adult getaway, which is what we have been and where our greatest success is. The number one activity in any tourist destination is shopping. We focus on that heavily. We have a lot more entertainment and live music and in adult entertainment, adult entertainment, it's not the bad use of the term, but place where they can have a good time, have a romantic getaway with each other. And there's no fear or anything like that. This is a nice, safe place to be. People can come here and be out late or entertain. We have 60 restaurants in Eureka Springs. We have a couple of hundred stores in Eureka Springs. And we have 3,000 guest rooms in Eureka Springs. But my favorite part of Eureka Springs is there's free admission.
And it's showing. The Great Passion Play, in operation for nearly 50 years, has closed for good due to declining ticket sales and deep debt. Yet, the Eureka Springs Advertising and Promotion Commission recently reported tax revenues were up by 10% over last year. And while the restored Palace Hotel and Bathhouse still stand as the only monument to Eureka's bordelloed past, you can still see, if you look very carefully on certain buildings in the downtown district, phallic iconography pressed into century-old brick walls, indicating red light activities which once occurred within. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, for the first time in recent memory, the front gates of the Great Passion Play in Eureka are locked, and the lights brightly illuminating the Christ of the Ozarks, the third tallest statue of Jesus in the world, are now dark. The free historic religious theme park, open day and night, was constructed on Magnetic Mountain in 1968 by evangelist and infamous anti-Semite Gerald L.K. Smith. More than 7 million people have paid to see the Passion Play. The park's assets are in foreclosure by Cornerstone Bank, formerly the Bank of Eureka Springs. CEO and President Charlie Cross points to dwindling interest.
That's basically what it is it's been several years of declining attendance, which, you know, just wears down the revenue stream, and ultimately you just can't make a go of it.
Cross, a native of Eureka Springs, would not comment on the debt obligation incurred by the foundation, which operates the facility, and says published reports citing million-dollar figures are wrong. But he says the foundation had, for a time, really prospered.
At some point, as the numbers started to decline, they had to utilize debt facilities to continue to operate, and I think I don't know exactly the year, but we've been the bank of record for them, both from a depository standpoint and a lending institution for a great number of years. But I can't tell you the exact date, but it's been several years ago that the assets of the foundation out there were mortgaged to our bank, and we've been trying to be a good partner to them, and they likewise have been a good one to us, and it's a very amicable situation as far as a conveyance of the assets back to the bank. It's not a foreclosure or you know, having to chase them around. Their board has done yeoman's work out there, and you know, we're appreciative of the work they've done to get it to the point it is, and it is going to be a very amicable transition of those assets over to us.
Cross says he hopes the 600-acre property will eventually reopen under new ownership. In the meantime, the bank will tend to the grounds and protect the historic site, including the graves of founders Gerald L.K. Smith and his wife, who are buried in the shadow of the 70-foot-tall Jesus statue.
This is Ozarks at Large. Northwest Arkansas is no stranger to professional theater companies. Two examples are Theater Squared and Ceramic Cow Productions, both of which are mounting their December productions this weekend and next weekend, respectively. Next month, a brand new theater company is looking to produce its premiere play. New Threshold Theater is a new company that will put on performances completely produced by young adults.
New Threshold Theater's mission is to engage youth performers and audience members in the power of theater performances in intimate settings.
That's 16-year-old Coleman Clark, the founder and artistic director of New Threshold Theater. Next month, the company is scheduled to produce its first show titled The Iliad, The Odyssey, and All of Greek Mythology in 99 minutes or less. But in order for that to happen, the group needs to raise $1,000 by next week. Company members are hoping to reach their goal through the use of a funding platform for creative projects called Kickstarter. Yesterday, Coleman stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio along with his fellow artistic directors Reed Carson and Jacob Benson to talk about their Kickstarter campaign.
A Kickstarter campaign will help local projects get funding, and it will kind of put your project out there to the public that may not hear about your project otherwise. So the way it works is that you set a time limit. Ours started with 22 days, and we're down to 8 as of today. And then you set a goal, which ours was $1,000. And Kickstarter, of course, takes a little bit out of that, so we'll end up having about $900 to do the show. Assuming that we get all of our funding. As of today, we have $720 pledged. So if we can get the remaining amount, then we will get $900 to be able to produce our show, which would be lovely because this will set us at a great spot to produce the show based off of this $900 so that all of our ticket sales can go directly towards our next performance. So this is just kind of our Kickstarter, getting us off the ground so that we can keep doing performances that will fund each other rather than us having to ask for the community's help every time.
So how did you guys come up with the budget of $1,000?
We met with a lot of professionals in Fayetteville and kind of talked through budgeting, and we kind of had an idea of what we could do a show for, because we knew that the rights were going to cost around $300, so we knew we had to block out that, and then we started thinking about just initial startup costs, things like the website, and what we had to buy theatrical tape the other day, which we'll use for many shows, but we had to think about costs that were only going to happen once in this year, and so we kind of added that in, and then the things like the costumes and the sets, we wanted to have enough money to be able to do those well, so that, you know, it'll obviously increase the production value.
I don't know if you've thought this far ahead, but how many shows are you guys expecting to do a year?
Two.
Yeah, I thought it was two.
Yeah, we've thought about doing two or three. And the weird part about this is that we're kind of starting in the middle of a season for most theater companies. So this is kind of what we're calling our trial period. So we're going to do this show and have several meetings and maybe meetings with our adult advisory board and try to figure out what went right with this show and what went wrong and learn from those things and figure out where we want to take this company next. So if it builds to something like we want to do 2 to 3 shows a year, which is what we're thinking right now, then that's great. But it may be something where we want to do just little theater projects that won't cost a lot of money in the community and stuff like that. So it may lead in that direction too.
Well, specifically with regard to Kickstarter, why is this something that you think people should support? Why should they donate to the Kickstarter project?
I think because of the opportunity that it presents. Most of the time, the only aspect kids are exposed to in acting or theater is just acting, basically. I feel like they'd get a more well-rounded aspect of the whole picture for theater if they want to pursue it. Like, I mean, production, sound, stage managing, all that, and even behind it, a company, like running your own company.
We've also got some great rewards set up on Kickstarter that you can check out. And, you know, they're not much, and you can tell that. But because we're just starting up, we don't have a lot of money to give out rewards. But we're definitely giving what we can, and we would love for the community support because it will really, really help this production, because instead of it all just coming out of our own pocketbooks, we can kind of expand the show a little bit more and hopefully have a better production.
Coleman Clark, Reed Carson, and Jacob Benson are all artistic directors at New Threshold Theater, and I spoke to them yesterday inside the Furman Gardner Performance Studio. The group has 7 more days to reach its goal of $1,000 through the use of its Kickstarter fundraising campaign. More information is available at newthresholdtheater.com.
It is Wednesday, December 5th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How
good.
Are you?
Very good. Thank you.
I'm thinking that I wish my dogs could do what I'm about to tell you about, but it would be destruction adventures with the Shih Tzus, okay. Not reading adventures with Scout. They have this at 3:30 today at the Rogers Public Library, encouraging kids to read by having a puppy help you.
Oh.
You didn't know puppies could read, did you?
I didn't know they could read, but I have a couple that are great reading companions.
And that's the point. Also tonight at 7 o'clock at the Walmart Auditorium at NWAC, the Chamber Singers perform. That's free. And Cactus Truck.
Yes.
Interesting. A trio from the Netherlands performs tonight at 7:30 at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on campus in Fayetteville.
And if you go see them, you can talk to them about something that you share in common with them, because they were just in New Orleans last night, your favorite city.
Ooh.
They're on their way from New Orleans to here right now.
And they're free.
That's right.
It's a good night of free things.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Every week on our Piano Puzzler, composer Bruce Adolph takes a familiar tune and rewrites it in the style of a classical composer. We get one of our listeners on the phone who tries to name the hidden tune and the composer whose style Bruce is mimicking. Play along with the PT Piano Puzzler, coming up on Wednesday's Performance Today from APM.
Performance Today, tonight at 8, here on KUAF 91.3 FM. Recently, we brought you the story of 2 graduates of the University of Arkansas's Creative Writing and Translation Graduate Program, who have both broken into the world of television screenwriting. Today, we have a story about another writer who has won a contest in the Pacific Northwest. Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson has the details.
Though This Stranger is an alt-weekly based in Seattle, the winner of this year's AMP Short Story Contest happens to live in Fayetteville, Arkansas. John Englehart, a third-year MFA candidate in fiction at the University of Arkansas, won $500 plus publication of his short story, Gingrich, in the Winter Arts Quarterly edition of the esteemed alternative paper. Parameters of the contest ask only that the story be 1,200 words or under and be set in Seattle. It was judged blindly this year by Rebecca Brown and Sherman Alexi. Now, Englehart does have Seattle ties. He grew up in Tacoma and has an undergraduate degree in creative writing from Seattle University. Englehart recently stopped by the KUAF studio to discuss the short story with me. The story, it opens with a safe word, and I was curious if that's what sparked the idea for writing the story, and then it kind of all fell into place after that, or what was the first idea in your story?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I wrote that first sentence down, one day Travis and Victoria decide that their safe word in bed should be Gingrich, and, you know, I kind of looked at that sentence and just thought it was really loaded and, was kind of eager to explore, but I had no idea kind of where it was going to go. I just kind of went with it.
Let's talk about endings.
Mm-hmm.
I've always found endings particularly hard. How about you?
Yes. Yeah. It's way easier to start a story.
Right. So, and this is a really short one. So, and I don't want to like ruin the ending. I don't want you to really talk about it, because then we want people to go online and read the story. But how did you know the ending that you came up with was the ending? When did you know that you were happy with it and that's how the story was going to finish?
And this is not typical of most of my stories. I do kind of have an ending. Well, usually I have an ending in mind, even towards the beginning, because that helps me, like, that propels me through the work, you know? Like, I'm eager to get somewhere. So I kind of had it in mind, but it's gone through a few revisions since then. And really what I was trying to get at in the end, you know, without, you know, trying to give it away, I'll be abstract, but I was trying to get at, you know, this, you know, how this safe word plays out being a kind of microcosm for how relationships work. And I think that the kind of end sentiment, at least I hope, points to that.
And what in your mind makes for a good ending?
Wow. Let's see. I guess, I mean, this is a lot of things, you know, we talk about in workshop and stuff too, is that a good ending kind of, you know, there's some resolution, but it doesn't wrap everything up in a neat moralizing package or anything like that. So it also kind of, you know, it resolves some of the conflict or some of the tension, but also kind of opens up to reflection, I guess. Yeah.
And as a storyteller, I'm curious, when did you decide, like, when was the first moment when you're like, I want to be a storyteller? And when did that happen? And what was the occasion?
Well, it happened when I was in high school, yeah, quite a while ago. And I started out writing lyrics for a band I was in at the time. And of course, they were terrible. Being high school, you know, band lyrics. But when I started writing stories, this thing happened where you'd finish them and then you could see how much further they had to go, like how much work needed to be put into it to make it better. And I think that's what's really propelled me through, I don't know, since then, through you know, to keep writing, I guess.
Englehart's short story, Gingrich, is published today in the Winter A&P edition of The Stranger. It's available in print and also online for those of us who are far away from Seattle. That would be at thestranger.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Quite a treat for us in the last few days.
Mm-hmm. Last week, actually.
Right. Still on the Hill. Yes. Came to the Furman Garner studio. Not just Kelly and Donna, mm-hmm. who have been Still on the Hill for the past decade.
Right.
But everybody.
See, I didn't know that there is more than two of them.
Phil Lancaster and John Johnston were part of the original ensemble. And they put out at least two, if not three, CDs as the four-piece. And toured extensively around the Midwest, mm-hmm. South and Southwest. And then about 10 years ago, Kelly and Donna went their way. Phil and John went their way. They all stayed friends. They all stayed in contact. But for the first time in a decade, they're reunited.
For a concert.
That's right. And we got them to reunite before that concert inside the Furman Garner studio. It was a lot of fun. And when they were here inside the Furman Garner studio, Kelly Mulholland said it just seemed natural that they eventually get back together, if only for this concert.
We've been dreaming of this for a long time. We still see each other. All this time we've been seeing each other. You know, now Phil moved down to Austin, and John's still in Fayetteville. So we all talk, and we've been fantasizing about this for a long time. And I guess Don and I are always looking for a new angle for our winter concert, our annual winter concert. And we thought, well, this would be the perfect way to spruce it up would be to have a reunion.
Have you guys considered a set list yet? I mean,
oh yeah, it's already done.
Already done. Well, when you're considering that, I mean, do you have to consider songs that you played years ago when you were four
pretty
of you?
Pretty much. Yeah, we had a lot of several CDs back then, so mm-hmm. we picked songs that we knew we could all do homework on our own,
right?
And go back and some of our classics, of our songs that were classics back then.
Yeah. We actually had our first rehearsal yesterday.
Day before.
Thank goodness. You would be suffering right. today after a while here.
And about halfway down the set list, we kind of heaved a sigh of relief because it was going fairly well. And
is it like riding a bicycle? Did you just kind
certain
of?
Certain songs.
For the most part.
Certain I was songs. Surprised. Yes. I was really surprised.
I think we were all pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. That
everything was just going smooth. Yeah.
But you're riding the bike. You have to remember that we played hard for those 6 years we were together.
5 years.
5 years. Yeah. And it was, we played hard. I mean, we knew these mm-hmm. songs inside out and backwards, and we played all over the country, and went up to Canada a bunch, and it was, mm-hmm. we were really working hard in those days. And mm-hmm. so these songs are deeply instilled in our
we were younger then, too, you know, had more gray cells.
One song that I still am grasping at some of the stuff that I did on the banjo, but I've pulled enough out of the Ethernet to pull it off. But there's a little bit. You know, every once in a while, there's some things that, gosh, I don't remember how I did that.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think through enough rehearsals, muscle memory?
I'll have probably most of it before the concert. The next practice, I'll have most of that stuff. But, you know, just trying to pull it out, I didn't have time to look at it before getting together with these guys. I've been somewhat busy.
Do you guys feel like you need a lot of rehearsals because you've played as this group before versus, saying, having a guest artist or something like that? You guys have played together before, so fewer rehearsals than, say, if it was somebody just kind of popping in to play with you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But still, we are going to make sure we're good and solid, and we'll probably get together at least four times.
We've got time to get together.
Yeah, we're having a good time. Yeah. I had a great time going through all these songs the other day. It's just like, it feels so good.
And our arrangements were pretty complicated, so to get them back to those arrangements is what is, you know, going to require.
And tightly knit.
Tightly knit.
It demands a certain, you know, it's a feeling as much as it is knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So getting the groove, you know, is always sometimes elusive. You know, I've been in situations, not necessarily up with these guys. It doesn't matter what you do. If you're not in the groove, you know it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, Donna, that this is the annual sort of winter concert. Mm-hmm. You guys have done several at Mike's house before it closed on Block Street. What's the idea behind the winter concert? Just a chance for your local folks to see you?
Yeah, we even did some back when we were the Four Piece. So it's been a long, long tradition of playing a concert at Good Folk. And mm-hmm. But every year in the last several years, we've always tried to reinvent ourselves and bring in new material or bring in something different and just really challenge ourselves to push the envelope. And so we're going to do that again this year. We've got several new songs we've never, ever played in public.
I heard one just a little while ago, and I couldn't help but say, you know, that would make a really good Still on the Hill song.
We're excited.
The way we're going to do the concert, by the way, is it's going to be in two sets, mm-hmm. and the final set will be the reunion, and it'll be extra long. And then we're going to do the first set will be a little bit shorter, and Don and I will play five songs, I guess. And then we also have a very special guest, Crow Johnson. And Crow Johnson's going to play a couple songs with us as well in that first set.
Mm-hmm. Crow Johnson was our manager, the four-piece manager for a lot of years.
Oh, okay.
This is going to be a kind of a throwback night.
It is.
And I don't know how many, I hope a lot of people remember Crow Johnson. You know, when I moved back to Fayetteville, and when I saw her, I realized that she was the most talented person around here. She just absolutely knocked my socks off. I just love her music.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very well known. She's been pretty much out of the scene for a good 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Still living in Northwest Arkansas, still up by Gravette.
Yep, mm-hmm. She is.
And what does she play?
She plays guitar and banjo, and she's a songwriter.
Okay.
Well, it's going to be a treat.
Of songwriters, Donna, you're a big one. So I was just curious if
prolific
is the word we like to use. If I was wondering, with you guys getting back together, if you wrote any new songs for you guys.
Well, not for this four-piece concert. We're sticking with the tried and true. But Kelly and I will be doing probably four or five brand new songs.
Okay, for you two.
In the first,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exciting.
You mentioned that you guys played hard when you were a four-piece, and you were all over the country. You were all over North America. What was it like traveling? And would you do, like, a show in, I'm just pulling names out of the hat, Dubuque, and then the next night be in Clearwater, and then the next night in Lincoln, Nebraska? Or how would it work?
No, we were more concentrated on putting a tour together, mm-hmm. and go out and do that and then come home. I always used to say touring nationally in America, you have to be 20 years old and can still handle drugs and alcohol.
Ah.
You know, I could not see ourselves doing coast to coast. And so we were regional. Texas being one of the regions, we managed to do some stuff up north, and then Florida was another.
Mm-hmm.
area. So that's
Crow,
kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, Crow was pretty good about lining it out in a nice, orderly fashion, I think. But it was one thing that was kind of challenging during the later years of the four-piece. We were actually homeschooling our son Taylor on the road. Right. And so there was times where there was four adults, upright bass, all of our equipment, and homeschooling a 12-year-old in a minivan. That had its challenges. But
we did a lot of festivals back then, and that meant several days of performing, 3 or 4 days a weekend. We camped a lot and stayed, you know, pretty tight together and played out in the campgrounds and, you know, just had a great time. We did a lot more playing sometimes off the stage than we did on the stage.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, you know, and actually that was it was kind of unusual. And it was a real grassroots approach to festivals because both Kerrville and Winfield, Kansas, which is called the Walnut Valley Festival, we just started camping there. We started jamming in the campgrounds late at night, and we got a buzz going. And before we knew it, we got hired on the main stage at both those festivals, which is really not the way it usually works.
Right.
And we were really pleased that happened. But it was just basically we were out there playing everywhere all the time.
The first time we were
so into it. I mean, we were just having such a great time.
The first time we went to Kerrville, which is an 18-day festival, but that was the 25th reunion, so they actually had a 25-day festival. But
we only
stayed for 3 days. Mm. But we were smitten, and we said we knew this is our crowd. We got to get this festival. So the next year we went back with the CD, and I mean, there was not a square inch on that ranch we didn't play on. and played all night, because that's the thing. You have the main stage that plays, and then you have the after-hours campfires that go until dawn. And we went until dawn.
We went until after dawn.
So
every day.
And that was the second year we went, and we were there for 11 days straight.
Wow.
So that's like really intense playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just being away from home for 11 days. Is,
well, I go now still to Kerrville, where I go early for land rush and stay late. And so I'm a month at Kerrville. Yeah.
Wow. Are you camping that time?
Yeah, I have a trailer, though.
Okay.
There you go.
A nice vintage
air conditioning.
Yeah.
No, I don't have. I could have air conditioning now. John experienced the electricity now down in camp. You know, it's a nice thing. That was not the way it was in the old days, you know, in the covered wagons.
Sure.
Do you remember your first ever gig together?
Oh, yeah. I do. And what was that called? It was Music on the Mountain?
No, something like
Church on the Mountain. Here in town,
Tam Milam.
It was a Presbyterian church up on Old Misery
Calvin.
Road.
Calvin.
Calvin. Yes.
Calvin.
It was that.
What was that? It was something coffee house.
Yeah. I remember that series. Yeah, they had it in the little, not the sanctuary, but kind of the adjacent cafeteria. Or
and then we also, for a little spell, we played down on Dixon Street for a while
at a
Giraldi's
place.
Pizza.
Oh.
And we were kind of the... for a little while, the house band down in Dixon for a while.
You know, $12 a night tips, you know, that sort of thing. Yep.
Where was Giraldi's?
I can't remember if it was Giraldi's. I want to say it was a different name than that.
Fonzarelli's?
It's probably changed names three times since then.
Yeah, but it's not
maybe,
there anymore.
No, it was it started with a G.
I agree with you there.
when we were just getting off the ground, we did a lot of stuff around
there's
town.
Still
we used to play at
there's
Ed's,
still one of those
Ed's
pizza places.
Remember
that place?
Yeah.
That was good barbecue.
Yes.
Played there.
We had some great jams
we'd
down
do anything.
There, too.
We played. You just drop a hat. Yeah. We play. You know, we wanted to play.
Our first real concert for me was when we played Mike Shirky's Good Folk Productions, and we really, really worked hard to be just right there, and that will always be one of my favorite concerts of all time.
That's always venue. Is
such
just
a wonderful venue, which Mike is now not participating with anymore and looking for a home. But that was a big step and to be invited by Mike and being a local, that was a big thing.
Now, of course for this winter concert, Mike is still the host.
Yes, exactly.
He will be our MC, and absolutely. This is and by the way, he's changing the name of his operation from Good Folk to Pick and Post Production.
Good.
Okay.
So this is a Pick and Post production at the Walton Art Center, but it is
in the Star Theater.
In Star Theater.
Yeah.
So Mike Shirky, Reunited Snow on the Hill, Crow Johnson.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Sounds like
yeah.
a good night.
It does.
We can't wait.
Fun.
Well, do you mind playing something?
Sure.
I would just love to do that.
Sure. Okay.
Well, I seen it come like a freight train rolling down the line. When the fancy first ways gonna be the other guys. Get away too long, daily that a dollar short. Don't come and round the door, I don't need you anymore. Now you're on your own.
Was Kelly Mulholland, Donna Stierna, Phil Lancaster, and John Johnston, the original four members of the folk group Still on the Hill, performing their song Now You're on Your Own in the Firm and Garner Performance Studio. The Still on the Hill reunion concert, which will also feature Crow Johnson, is scheduled for 8 p.m. December 14th in the Walton Arts Center Star Theater. Tickets are $16 and more information is available at waltonartscenter.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 5th of December, 2012. It's the birthday of Joan Didion, born Sacramento, 1934, whose most recent book, Blue Nights, was a memoir about the death of her daughter, Quintana Roo. She writes about her daughter's struggles with mental illness and drug abuse and the guilt that the mother feels. Joan Didion, who said, "I don't think anybody feels like they're a good parent, or if people think they're good parents, they ought to think again." It's the birthday of humorist Calvin Trillin, born Kansas City, Missouri, 1935, staff writer for many years for The New Yorker and deadline poet for The Nation magazine. It's the 60th anniversary of the Great Smog in London, 1952. London had been famous for its fog for many years. Evelyn Waugh wrote, "The decline of England dates from the day we abandoned coal fuel. We used to live in a fog, the splendid, luminous, tawny fogs of our early childhood. We designed a city that was meant to be seen in a fog." But this one was different. In December 1952, it had been very cold, and so Londoners had burned more coal to keep warm. But on the 5th of December, when the fog rolled in, there was a thermal inversion, and the fog mingled with soot and tar and sulfur dioxide, and it was trapped over the city. And the moisture in the fog reacted to the chemicals and created droplets of sulfuric rain. For 5 days, it hung in the air. The city virtually shut down. At some points, people could not even see their own hands and feet. They were getting lost in their own neighborhoods. It wasn't until the undertakers started running out of coffins that people realized how deadly this great smog of 1952 had been. When it lifted, it left 4,000 Londoners dead, and over the following months, an additional 8,000. And 4 years later, Parliament passed the first Clean Air Act in Great Britain. It's the birthday of Walt Disney, born in Chicago, 1901, who started out making short animated cartoons for movie theaters called Laugh-O-Grams. And it's the birthday of Nunnally Johnson, born Columbus, Georgia, 1897, a short story writer and journalist who went to California to work in the film industry. He did the screen adaptation of Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath in 1940 and toned down some of Steinbeck's political ideas. And he gave the Joad family a happier ending in the movie than they had met in the book. Here's a poem for today, a poem by Lewis Simpson, As Birds Are Fitted to the Boughs. As birds are fitted to the boughs that blossom on the tree and whisper when the south wind blows, so was my love to me. And still she blossoms in my mind and whispers softly, though the clouds are fitted to the wind is to the snow. Lewis Simpson's poem, As Birds Are Fitted to the Boughs, from The Owner of the House, published by Boa Editions Limited and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances to art, food, wine, and culture. You can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Theater Squared continues its seventh season with Period of Adjustment December 6th through 30th at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studios. In Tennessee Williams' only comedy, one newlywed and one newly separated couple are brought together on Christmas Eve in a humorous, poignant exploration of love and the need for human warmth. Tickets and information are available at theater2.org or 443-5600. The KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway is Friday, December 14th. This drawing is your chance to win a gift from one of many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants include Adventure Subaru, Mason Creek Farm, Collier Drug Stores, Lifestyles Car Wash, and more. Registration and details are available on the web at KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Cane Hill. Ever been to Cane Hill?
You know, I haven't. I see it on a map a lot, but I don't think I've been there.
It's worth the drive and see the old college there, the old college building.
That's right.
Yep.
I keep meaning to do that. Put that on the list.
Okay.
That's on there. It's there. Of
our field trips. Very good.
Excellent. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large at noon. Kyle will be back with Christina Thomas. And right. Kyle, you and I will be back on Friday.
That's correct.
All right. Thanks for listening and have a fantastic day.